right, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, January 21st, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Good morning, everyone. How you doing? This happy, freezing cold Wednesday. At least it's sunny here today, but it's damn cold. Hold on one second. We'll do a temperature check. We got to go to mobile. All my little sidelines that used to work every day don't work anymore on my computer. They just give me service not available. Hold on. And it is 11 degrees. That's colder than I thought. 11 degrees and partly cloudy, it says here. So that's damn cold for me. Hope it's warmer where you are. I don't know. I wonder if Hawaii's getting snow still. I know they did at Christmas time. So, the State of the Union. I'm not talking about it today because I really don't have much to say unless you guys want to talk about it and we could always take calls. But it wasn't anything that I didn't anticipate. A lot more blubbery bullshit and fairy tale stories to make you feel good. And to convince you that everything that you believe is wrong. Yeah, we're going to do great things here. One of the things that I did see, though, speaking about good old Barry, is the Trans-Pacific Partnership seems to be in the news again. There were a couple stories I saw over the last few days, and it's been really quiet. I know we've been watching it. One of the things about the Trans-Pacific Partnership that we talked about in the past was the fact that they were going to be using that to hide where your food comes from. They wouldn't have to tell you where your food comes from. It would put corporations in charge and pretty much allow them to tell us what was going to happen from a business perspective. It was a pretty scary document, and much of it was secret. So I wanted to read, something came out actually from Reuters. It looks like it's today's date, but it says 6:36 Eastern time. Maybe that's AM. It doesn't say PM. Has to be first thing this morning. So let me read this. Obama reframes controversial Pacific Trade Pact. U.S., not China, must write the trade rules. Yay! But are we any better than China? Obama said on Tuesday, the United States and not China must write trade rules for Asia, and called on Congress to give the White House a freer hand to close trade deals. That's not sounding too good to me. Obama, who is pushing to overcome resistance to so-called fast-track authority from within his own party as well as from Republicans, said if China prevails, the U.S. workers and businesses would be at a disadvantage, you think? That, quote, that is why I'm asking both parties to give me trade promotion authority to protect American workers with strong new trade deals from Asia and Europe that aren't just free but fair, he said in the State of the Union address, also acknowledging past deals had not always, quote, lived up to the hype, unquote. What makes you think that we're going to trust you now? I don't. Sure, give him the pen and the power and the ability to wordsmith lies and obfuscation into the document and see what happens. And yes, China was never part of the TPP. I know they were holding out for a long time, and it even says China is not part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The United States is negotiating with 11 other trading partners, which aims to set common standards on issues such as worker rights and the environment, as well as lower trade barriers. Yes, but we are going to be setting standards with countries like Indonesia. And do you think the standards are going to go up? Oh, probably not, because that costs companies a lot more. Standards will go down. It's not going to be in our best interest. Trust me. It's going to be like making the United States a full third world nation. The Asian giant is instead pushing for faster progress toward a trade pact with the wider Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Bloc, which is known as APEC, not OPEC, APEC. Asked about Obama's comments, China's foreign ministry said on Wednesday that the country was willing to work with the United States to resolve trade problems. God, we're having trouble with trade with China. The dollar store is going to have shortages. We hope each side can put forth joint efforts to provide a fair, open, and transparent trade and investment environment. And I'll tell you what, the investment is the key term here. Back, oh, must have been a month or so ago, China opened their stock market up to foreign investment. And that had been a first for them. The stock market went apeshit. I don't know what it's doing right now. Wish my stock ticker worked, even for the U.S. But I know things have been slowing down because of oil production and pricing. But regardless, China is hungry for international investment dollars, right? Invest in us, not the United States, is the way I look at it. Anyway, so China says, we hope each side can put forth joint efforts to provide a fair, open, and transparent trade and investment environment and jointly work to make contributions improving global investment rules, said the ministry spokesman in a daily briefing. National Association of Manufacturers President Jay Timmons said a fast track, which gives Congress just a yes or no vote on trade agreements in exchange for setting negotiating objectives. And remember, the fast track does not allow Congress to comment on anything. It's either yes or no. Either you vote it up or down. They did that with the budget. I don't know if they did it this last December, but they did it the December before. And that pretty much eliminated extension of unemployment benefits and other things for a couple months while Congress went on their Christmas vacation. Because of that, fast tracking is not a good thing in any way, shape, or form. You know, we've seen that with vaccines and declared states of emergency. Anyway, so it gives them a yes and no vote on trade agreements in exchange for setting negotiation objectives, which would make trading partners like the United States more seriously and backed, which would make trading partners take the United States more seriously and backed Obama's focus on China. I think it's important to note that there are countries all over the world, China included, that would like to take away America's mantle of economic leadership, he said. Trade supporters and critics are already lobbying lawmakers on fast-track authority, and Maryland state lawmaker Steny Hoyer, the second-ranking House Democrat, said that the White House had to consider Democrats' concerns about the trade deals hurting jobs and wages. Yeah, it's going to make us a third-world country. It's what I'm trying to tell you guys. And we're not going to have any type of labeling that says the country of origin for your food. And, oh, if there were any states that managed, and I don't know, there might have been one, like maybe New Hampshire, that managed to get GMO labeling laws through, well, that'll negate that as well. Quote, the majority of Democrats right now are very hesitant, to say the least, and not at all sure that trade is good for working people, said Hoyer, who voted against the fast track in 2002. But he has supported major trade deals. And that was the end of the story. So put on a seatbelt, because 2015 looks like the year that they're going to try to push that. Not a good idea, in my opinion. I don't know about you, but I know I don't want to be eating Chinese slaughtered chicken. And now, especially since they're doing mass cullings again with bird flu, don't see how shipping our chickens to be slaughtered and processed and then sent back to the United States has ever been a good idea, but especially now. There was one more story that I found last night on TPP. Hold the phone. We will see if we can locate this. Oh, how's everyone doing for a Wednesday? I get some sleep, so it was always a good thing. Here we go. Repealing the TPP. So that wasn't even actually like the TPP. That was just the addition to the TPP, including China. This one's from Global Research. Repealing the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Fast track, not a done deal. The people will stop it. Well, so we hope. Fast tracking is never a good thing. That means that people don't read. That means that people can't line item veto. That means you can't make any changes and additions. I mean, that's like someone handing you a loan agreement and saying, yeah, you can read it, but there's no argument and make sure you sign it. And you know what? Don't worry about the fine print. All right, this starts out. There is bipartisan opposition in Congress to fast track and a large movement of movements mobilized to stop it. Well, good for that. Corporate media is reporting that since the Republican leadership and Obama support fast track trade authority, it is a done deal. And that message, also heard by countries negotiating the TPP, is driving the race to finalize that agreement. The truth is, fast track is not a done deal, and there is bipartisan opposition in Congress and a large movement of movements organized to stop it. Across the political spectrum, there is mass opposition to fast-tracking the secretly negotiated TPP, which is the Transatlantic Investment, well, the Transatlantic Partnership, and the TTIP, which is the European Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, also known as, a.k.a. TAFTA. Wow, that's almost like if you put an N at the beginning, wouldn't that be NAFTA? And look at what that did for us. The a.k.a. TAFTA. Which is, I'm not even sure what the TAFTA stands for, and also the Trade in Services Agreement, which is abbreviated TISA. So we have the TPP, the TTIP, which is AKA the TAFTA, and the TISA. Wow, nothing like going out of your way to confuse the shit out of normally confused Americans. People remember, hey, look, he brought it up. People remember the impact of NAFTA on job losses. Yes, I do. Destruction of Mexican agriculture, expansion of inequality, environmental degradation, and increased immigration. The most recent South Korean trade pact, which Obama touts as a success, is leading to similar results of lost jobs and an expanding U.S. trade deficit. Members of both parties know that Obama will be out of office when the negative impacts of these trade agreements are felt. Congress will be alone facing an angry electorate while Obama is raising money for his post-presidential career from the transnational corporations who get rich off these agreements at the expense of everyone else. Yay! On the conservative side of the political spectrum, there is more organizing than ever. Wow. Breitbart, which I don't really read Breitbart, but hey, we'll let him be referenced here, reports that, quote, a fast-track bill faces conservative headwinds, unquote. The opposition as a broad spectrum of the Republican Party and represents all three legs of the traditional Republican Party stool, which are national security, economics, and faith-based. You know, that's the one thing, like national security. How about food security? We've kind of looked at that briefly a few times now. And there had been a report not too long ago about the lack of FDA food inspectors. And one of the things that I had read is that because we have so few FDA inspectors, that they were going to be allowing now countries that imported food into the United States to be responsible for their own food inspection. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? I know it does me. I always double check things now when I buy them to make sure there's no mouse in the bottom of the can. Breitbart quickly, Breitbart quotes Rick Manning of Americans for Limited Government expressing concern about the secrecy surrounding the trade agreements, a concern shared by colleagues across the spectrum. Quote, we don't know what's in it. We do know that this is a huge grant of authority to Obama. Dana Milbank, writing for the Washington Post, notes how for 6 years, Republicans have railed about Obama usurping power and the irony of its leadership now wanting to give Obama massive expanded power through fast track. He highlights the Tea Party opposition to fast track and notes that roughly 30 House Republicans have already been on record opposing the trade legislation. The conservative activist base predicts that number is growing. I hope so. And if the Republicans can do anything good for us, it would be to stop this crazy shit. Conservatives have taken to calling the trade deals Obama trade and do not want to see the Congress give away its authority under the Constitution's Commerce Clause to, quote, regulate commerce with foreign nations. And that is true. The fast track pretty much makes all of our elected officials in Congress duds. They just have to stamp it or no stamp. That's it. And Manning describes the fast track as Congress's, quote, effectively tying its own hands, unquote. In a press statement quoting multiple conservative leaders, the TeaParty.net leader Niger Innes builds on Manning's point, describing fast track as ceding additional legislative powers to Obama that would be a monumental failure of the congressional Republicans. I mean, I don't care what team you're on. Just don't let this go through. I mean, I think they all should be worried about this. This is going to be our food security future. This is going to be our jobs. This is going to be knowing what is in our food. This is going to be the middle class being sucked out. And how ironic that part of the State of the Union was talking about the middle class and how great it is, where on the flip side, out of the other side of his mouth, he's having these secret trade discussions that are going to suck whatever is left in this country out. And it won't even be like a straw with an orange. It's going to be like a super slurry through an orange. It'll go quick. These conservatives highlight Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell admitting fast track is, quote, an enormous grant of power, obviously, from a Republican Congress to a Democratic president, unquote. Manning described McConnell's path as the opposite of what Congress should be doing, saying that the legislation is, quote, an ill-founded grant of trust to a president who has repeatedly shown that he has outright disdain for the legislative branch. Rather than providing a speedy up-down vote, the Senate should examine every aspect of any treaty that is presented to ensure that the American interests are advanced, unquote. And I have to say, I emphatically agree with that statement. I mean, how can we trust this man? We can't. Why would we give him more power? We shouldn't. We should be locking down on all these usurp powers. We should take away his robo-pen. And our Congress should be doing the jobs that they were elected to do, which is represent the interests of the people. Frank Gaffney, president and founder of the Center for Security, told, and again, another publication I do not read, World News Daily, WND, that, quote, we know the people bringing us this deal have a record of serial malfeasance. Boy, that's got to make you feel warm and fuzzy. With respect to negotiations, it would not only be the height of irresponsibility to essentially give the president a blank check, but it would be something that makes the Congress complicit, absolutely, in the next bad deal if they give the president fast track authority, unquote. WND reported that an event on Capitol Hill, Glenn Wright, executive director of Eagle Forum, presented remarks from conservative icon Phyllis Schlafly. Hey, I heard Phyllis Schlafly's quotes. They play her at the top of the hour on RBN. I don't know. She's pretty conservative. People say a lot of nasty things about her, but I've heard her say some good things. I honestly, I don't know anything about her, but just funny to see her name. Good old Phyllis Schlafly. She blasted the congressional move toward fast track as sending the wrong message, saying, quote, fast track just legitimizes what the president has already done once again behind Congress's back, unquote. And she's correct. Religiously conservative Sandy Rios, the director of government affairs for the American Family Association, emphasized opposition to the trade agreements because they undermine the traditional role of the United States in using its economic might to expand freedom around the world, saying, quote, wisdom dictates that America must use all means at its disposal to resist religious persecution. Come on, this isn't about religious persecution. I'm not even going to read her comments because that pisses me off. It is for this reason that American Family Association opposes passage of fast-track legislation that negates their ability to change. And it does. It negates their ability to change the Trans-Pacific Partnership to end oppression in Vietnam, Brunei, and Malaysia. And it does. I mean, these are nations where these people work for slave wages, pennies a day, and don't think that that isn't going to be coming to America if we ink and allow Barry to ink these secret trade agreements. Why do you think they're secret? They're not secret because they're proud of them. They're secret because they're hiding shit in them that they don't want you to know about. All corporately financed leaders of governments. I just actually saw something just before I came on air. Let me just see if I can see that headline. I don't remember which page I posted it on. I think it was on Behind the Curtain, actually. And it was the rich are getting richer. 80 of the richest people in the world, get this, have the wealth of 3.5 billion of the world's poorest people. Now, if the writing isn't on the wall there, I don't know what is. All right, let's get back to the story. This is kind of, holy crap. This is a long story. I don't know if we're going to read this whole thing. Jeez. And I don't even know where I was. All right, here we are. Conservatives, like progressives, want the trade agreements to be considered under regular order, which would allow, and yes, this is not with fast track, it would allow for unlimited debates and amendments. And we want that ability. We want to be able to call bullshit on a line item, debate it viciously, and then come up with changes and amendments to the policy. Okay, we don't want to just rubber stamp it and say, sure, go ahead, Barry. You do whatever you need to do to make shit happen. We don't need that. We don't need that. And we're going to have corporations leaving the country just like they did with NAFTA. They went down to Mexico, car producers produced them a lot cheaper with the labor, and then they sold them back here. Trans-Pacific Partnership, from some of the secrets that leaked out, from what I've read, will allow corporations to go to countries like Malaysia to use the 12 cents an hour labor to produce their goods where there aren't any environmental laws like we have here, and then force the United States to purchase the products, not holding them to any slave labor concerns or environmental concerns. And they can come after us and sue if we don't accept the product. On January 8th, a large coalition of progressive and liberals organizations joined with more than a dozen members of Congress to express opposition to Fast Track and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Larry Cohn, president of the Communication Workers of America, described the coalition as, quote, the largest coalition to ever oppose global trade agreements representing tens of millions of Americans. Representative Rosa DeLauro, Democrat of Connecticut, who is leading the opposition on the Democratic side in Congress, echoed Cohn's views, saying, quote, this is one of the broadest advocacy coalitions we have ever had. There is no reason why we should exacerbate the loss of jobs and lower wages in the United States. It's exactly what I'm saying. This is not in our best interest. We should all be standing up, screaming, saying we don't want this shit at all. Opponents on the left argue, quote, that the president is asking for carte blanche to hammer out trade deals that would cost American jobs, weaken food safety and financial regulations, and undermine environmental and labor standards, unquote. When Obama toured the country to discuss the economy, he avoided mention of the trade agreements as he knows the Democratic base opposes them. But even without mentioning them, yeah, because the Democratic base all remembers NAFTA. But even without mentioning them, people in Detroit took the opportunity of a presidential visit to express their anger. And look, yes, Detroit, like I said, NAFTA and the car companies, and they shipped them all to Mexico. I watched that firsthand. Politico reports that even before he landed, Obama was being attacked by labor, Hill Democrats, and others in his base for his call for new trade deals. Reuters reports that the local official said, quote, the Korean Free Trade Agreement has helped that country's auto industry significantly more than the U.S. sector, unquote. They told the president that trade agreements would hurt manufacturing jobs like those in the resurgent auto industry. And yeah, speaking about resurgent auto industry, I want to make a side note of a story that I saw yesterday. And I guess I didn't realize this until probably about a year ago, but you know, back when I was a kid, having a parent that worked in the auto industry in manufacturing, I was made very aware of the competition between the US car manufacturers and the Japanese car manufacturers. When NAFTA happened, I was made very aware of what NAFTA meant to Detroit and how the automakers were moving production down to Mexico where there was much cheaper labor. And I think they made like the Aspire, one of those little tin can cars down there. And I was brought up to believe that foreign cars were bad. They were bad for the economy. Now, I got to tell you, years later, so I've never owned a foreign car. I've had to own American cars. Plus, having a family that worked for an American car company, I always got discounts, so it made it a little bit easier to swallow American cars. But as I've gotten older, I've had many friends who have driven, especially Japanese vehicles, like little Toyota trucks, who managed to get hundreds of thousands of miles out of these little trucks at 20 years old. You know what I mean? And so I took another look at foreign vehicles. And something I then discovered that I guess I never realized is that a lot of the foreign car manufacturing actually sprung up down in the United States South. I don't know if you knew that, but there's a lot of foreign car manufacturing that is now going on down in the south of the United States, and they pay pretty decently. I don't know if they're unionized. I think that was one of the big things that they weren't unionized, but they still paid a decent wage. But I just saw Toyota was moving their new U.S. headquarters to Northern Texas. I think it was Plano, maybe. That was yesterday. And that looks pretty interesting. It was a huge investment. Not against any of the American car companies. It's just that was pounding in my head for many, 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 many years, stay away from foreign cars. And one of the reasons was because they weren't being manufactured here and it was taking away from U.S. jobs. But that is not necessarily the case today. Not in all cases, anyway. All right, so let's see where I left off here. The White House has touted the South Korean trade pact as the type of agreement Obama wants to see the facts in his first 2 years. The pact resulted in a $7.6 billion increase, $7.6 billion increase in the trade deficit with South Korea and the loss of 50,000 jobs. Now, what's interesting about that is South Korea pretty much is like a U.S. territory. Especially being at the border with North Korea, it's kind of like our outpost there. I did not realize, though, that there was such a massive trade deficit, $7.6 billion with South Korea. Perhaps the president is making the mistake of believing the false and misleading statements of the U.S. Trade Representative. Lori Wallach, the director of the Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, said, quote, "The fact that the Korea deal has resulted in a worse trade deficit and more lost jobs has had a very chilling effect on public and congressional support for the TPP and fast-tracking." The AFL-CIO's Richard Trumka said unions oppose the trade deals and will put resources into a campaign to stop fast-track. Celeste Drake, the AFL-CIO's policy specialist for trade and international economics, told Politico that there is no way to make an argument both for a major international trade deal and for American workers as Obama is attempting to do, adding, quote, "If you're serious about reviving U.S. manufacturing and raising wages for American workers, the last thing you want is yet another race to the bottom trade agreement that doesn't empower workers and empowers companies to offshore jobs." Yes, that is exactly what I said. That's what this is, the huge sucking sound taking us to third world status. This is what it's gonna do. She continues, "And if you fight fast track, the process that guarantees that bad trade deals become law, you fight it tooth and nail." When trade negotiators gathered in Washington, D.C. in early December, they were protested by a broad coalition of groups. The day of protest began with a popular resistant blockade of the U.S. trade reps building, calling for release of the text and opposing fast track. And yes, We still have not seen the full text of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Eyes on Trade, which is a publication, reports, quote, hundreds of activists from labor, environmental, consumer, human rights, public health, internet freedom, faith and family, farm activists all joined concerned citizens to make their voices heard outside of the secretive negotiations, unquote. The cry heard from the protests was no fast track now, no fast track ever. The TPP is a lost endeavor. That's pretty good. Eyes on Truth further reports, fast track faces wide opposition in U.S. Congress and among the U.S. public. Though a fast track bill was tabled about 1 year ago, it has gone nowhere due to massive opposition from most Democrats and a sizable block of Republicans. This past September, nearly 600 organizations sent a letter opposing fast track to Chair Ron Wyden. He's the chair of fast track? Wow, he used to be a friend. Against Fukushima. I wonder what happened. A poll earlier this year found that 62% of U.S. voters oppose fast-tracking the TPP. You know, Fukushima is one thing to be aware of. You know, they just came out and announced that for the first time ever, rice grown in the Fukushima prefecture was radiation-free, which is absolute utter bullshit, number one. But if something like the TPP went through where they don't have to publish the country of origin on your food, and I mean, a lot of food doesn't publish their country of origin now, I've noticed, but especially if the TPP was passed, you will never know where your rice came from or where your tea came from. And I don't think that that's a good thing at all. I like to know where my food comes from. I'm very particular about things. Indeed, a year ago, when the Congress considered fast track, there was a massive outpouring of opposition. Congress received more than 40,000 phone calls and over 600,000 emails opposing fast track in just 10 days. More than 100 organizations joined to stop the fast track coalition. 5.4 million users were reached in the social media thunderclap. And 50 rallies and protests were held in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. Yeah, remember, too, there's that whole North American Union that I don't know if they ever got that fully going or not. I know that the borders are pretty open now between Canada and Mexico, though you still need a passport or some sort of citizen driver's license to cross over. But I know at least for trucking and products passing through, they pretty much opened the door. In November 2014, the opposition to TPP grew significantly when the world's largest trade union, the International Trade Union Confederation, representing 176 million workers, added their voice to the growing list of organizations and individuals speaking out against the trade pact. I mean, you guys see where this is going, right? This is part of everything else that's going on. It is the push toward globalization. Globalization is not a good thing. Sure, trading amongst partners globally, you know, that's awesome. That's what the internet's for. But doing mass trade, allowing corporations to move from this country while still having benefits of this country to foreign nations to take advantage of their lax laws and then force us to buy products back is criminal. Forcing us to lower wages in this country, to go further into debt and trade deficit, to poison us more with lax controls over what's in our food, lax inspections. How is that a good thing for anyone except for the corporations? It's not. And at least there's a lot of people globally, obviously, that are getting wise to this fact. In November, during the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit, which is the APEC, not OPEC, there were protests held around the world against the TPP. In the United States, a broad coalition of labor unions, environmental, consumer, faith, online, and other groups assembled at Capitol Hill to deliver 713,674 petition signatures opposing fast track Eyes on Trade reporting on these worldwide protests said the message of citizens across the globe is clear. We are not willing to accept a trade deal negotiated in secret in the interest of corporations and at the expense of our rights to safety, democracy, and health, unquote. Hallelujah. See, I'm not crazy, guys. Obama will be urging action on fast track in his upcoming State of the Union, which was yesterday, that I am not going to talk about. Though maybe if Pigmine posted a couple snippets, we'll hear them. Bringing national attention to trade agreements shrouded in secrecy. As more people learn about these agreements, opposition will grow across the political spectrum. Hey, as far as I'm concerned, if there's any reason for bipartisanship, now is the time. Stop this march into the fire, into the even bigger fire. There will be immediate reactions of tens of thousands contacting Congress to oppose fast track and secretive trade deals. Dave Johnson has a preview of the State of the Union and a response to what Obama is expected to say. He notes that Obama's plans have an owner of a small business that has increased exports to South Korea. This will be a false story, as the opposite is more common. On the specific point of small business, Johnson writes, quote, the Corfus FTA, which is probably the Korean blah, 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 fast track, whatever, has hit American small businesses harder than large ones. According to the U.S. Census Bureau data, small firms with fewer than 100 employees, oh, those happen to be the same ones that have to go on Obamacare, saw exports to Korea drop 14%, while firms with more than 500 employees saw exports decline by 3%. The State of the Union will be followed by Congress holding hearings on fast tracks at the end of January, so it's coming up. Congress is likely to introduce legislation on fast track shortly after that. This will galvanize opposition, and members of Congress will realize that they are risking their careers if they support this authority to Obama. They will understand that these NAFTA on steroid agreements risk their political futures. The arguments are on our side. Public Citizen published a report reviewing the 20-year history of these corporate trade agreements. The data paints an ugly picture. One, trade deficits have exploded, growing more than 440% with countries with fast-tracked trade pacts. Since Fast Track was used for NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, the U.S. goods trade deficit has more than quadrupled from $216 billion to $870 billion. Number two, good American jobs were destroyed. Nearly 5 million U.S. manufacturing jobs, one in four, were lost since the fast tracking of NAFTA. Number three, U.S. wages have stagnated and inequality has soared, with three of every five manufacturing workers who lost a job finding reemployment with pay cuts, one in three losing greater than 20% of their income, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. U.S. wages have barely increased in real terms since 1974, the year that Fast Track was first enacted, despite American worker productivity doubling. And, you know, that whole productivity thing, I got to tell you, back in, oh, it must have been the early 2000s, right around the first big crash, so maybe 99 to 2000, maybe it was, the big first stock market crash when Nortel went belly up the first time, and we all lost all kinds of money. Microsoft came out with a new sales tagline I'll never forget. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, that's interesting, especially being in a company that sold technology. Microsoft's new mantra was do more with less. And I was like, that's weird. Don't we want people to do less with more or do more with more? Why would we be pushing the mantra do more with less? That's not the American way. And do you know, it hasn't changed since then. It's all been about, and I mean, I'm not for consumerism and disposable society. I have a big problem with that. I have a big problem with people buying plastic shit that lasts 2 years and throwing it away and buying a new one. Okay, that's planned obsolescence. I don't like that. I like the days when you could buy a Maytag washing machine that lasted 50 years. But on the other hand, why would you be encouraging a capitalist society to do more with less? That just really seemed oddball-y to me. And the fact that, now I'm looking back in retrospect, the fact that it was coming out of Microsoft's mouth, good old Billy, that it makes a lot more sense now. He's been trying for a long time to turn us into a third world nation. Number four here, U.S. food exports have stagnated while food imports have doubled under NAFTA and the World Trade Organization. The average annual U.S. agricultural deficit with Canada and Mexico under NAFTA's first two decades reached a staggering $975 million, almost three times the pre-NAFTA level. Approximately 170,000 small U.S. family farms have gone under since NAFTA and the World Trade Organization took effect. And I mean, more of that is happening now when you look at now all these, world weather disasters, especially on California's West Coast, droughts, culling of animals, non-planting of crops, price increases galore. It's not going to get any better. This is a hard record to defend. Congress will be made aware of the failure of corporate trade agreements and warn that they will be the ones paying the political price. Congress needs to live up to its constitutional duty and oppose a fast track and examine these agreements closely. Yes, unlike the NDAA, that only one, or I think maybe it was two, congressmen read before voting on it. That's got to be a part of the job. You are required to read anything you vote upon. And guess what? If you haven't gotten through it yet, it's like a homework assignment. Then, Johnny, you're going to be in detention. These trade agreements are game changers for climate justice. People can work to stop extreme energy extraction or create new energy economies in the face of climate change. But if these treaties become law, their efforts will have been in vain and their successes reversed. Well, right, because we're going to allow corporations to go to countries that have no environmental controls whatsoever. The same is true for internet activists who are working to ensure a free and open internet, and that's coming soon, too. All of the work on raising wages will be undone by trade agreements that allow corporations to sue for unexpected lost profits from laws passed in the public interest. That's what I was saying. These corporations that go outside the country, produce, and then come back, if we then say, well, we're not going to buy your product because you don't have country of origin listed, they're going to say, well, we should have made $10 bazillion on you, and we're going to sue the shit out of you, America, because you should be buying our product. On issue after issue, if we fail to stop these trade agreements, it will be a major setback. The only way these agreements can become laws through secret negotiations in league with transnational corporations, followed by Congress giving up its constitutional responsibility for not having a democratic and transparent review process. Stopping the fast track is the essential task ahead. A major opportunity, sorry, to show our opposition to fast track and stop these trade agreements will be in New York City. A meeting of trade negotiators for the TPP has been scheduled for January 26th through February 1st. So let's take a look. That's 5 days from now. That's next Monday. I'm going to have to see if I can find something that's doing live coverage on that, and we'll keep up on that. It will take place at the Sheraton Times Square Hotel in Midtown Manhattan. So any of you that are in Manhattan, that might be something to visit and report on. I definitely would bring you on the show or do a recorded segment if you want. Just email me at contact.ucytv@gmail.com. They are pushing hard to complete the negotiations, and a protest at this event will let trade negotiators know that people say no to fast track, no way, not ever, not today. Do. So there you go. That is probably the most information that I have seen on the Trans-Pacific Partnership in months on end. So interesting that something squeaked out of there. I'm glad to see that there is a lot of opposition from a lot of different sides. That's a plus, but that doesn't stop Barry. We know that. I'm not sure who he's going to have to buy off or what type of majority he's going to need, but I'll dig into that over the next few days and we'll take a look. We'll also keep up on what's going on the floor to see when that comes up for a vote and see what the arguments are, if any, against the fast track or for it. I wanted to actually play this clip, though. This is the one I caught this morning, and I've seen a few stories about the 1%, but here we are, the rich are getting richer. 80 of the world's richest have the wealth of the 3.5 billion poorest in the world. I mean, talk about inequality. This is like off the hook.
The wealthiest 1% of the world's population could soon be worth more than everybody in the world put together. And it's not that many people who are the wealthiest people in the world. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, and these are pretty startling. I mean, I think you hear about global inequality. It sounds kind of, what is that? Very abstract. Well, how about this? The 80 richest people in the world combined have the same wealth as the poorest 3.5 billion people in the world. The poorest 50%, half of the world, 80. Same amounts of money. Oxfam is an anti-poverty charity, and they say that the world's richest 1% now have 48% of the world's wealth. That's simply staggering. This was a huge talker online, been trending on a lot of social media. It's something millennials, when they're polled, say they care about deeply, income inequality.
Well, and they should. Hold on, let me disconnect this. They should. That's highly disturbing. I mean, everything that we are against, which is the corporate control of what happens globally, us having no say in the matter, these rich fuckers playing war games everywhere, rich getting richer, Congress being, more than 50% of Congress being millionaires now while invested in the military industrial complex, and global wars growing everywhere on a daily basis. I saw yesterday, Hammy actually dropped me a link that now Yemen has fallen. They had the here we go. This is pretty significant as Yemen is kind of the doorway to Iran. Rebels capture Yemen's presidential palace. Fragile efforts to bring stability to one of the poorest and most unstable countries in the Arab world appear to be nearing collapse in Yemen on Tuesday, as rebels attacked the embattled presidential palace and swept into the palace. The U.S.-backed government in the Yemeni capital of Sanaa was in delicate negotiations with Shiite Houthi rebels when violence erupted. President Abdelrabdu Mansour Hadi was inside the residence as it came under heavy shelling for half an hour, but he was unharmed and protected by guards. At the same time, rebels took control of the presidential palace and were staging a coup, said Army Commander Colonel Saeed Al-Jumani, who leads the Presidential Protection Force. This is a coup. There is no other word to describe what is happening but a coup, adding that the rebels were likely aided by insiders. The UN Security Council met on Tuesday and condemned the violence, calling for a ceasefire and the resumption of talks, while also underlining that Hadi, quote, is the legitimate authority of Yemen, unquote. Now, I thought I had actually read something that he actually was a U.S. puppet, so we'll see. In Washington, the State Department said that it is closely monitoring the events, but no decision has been made on whether to close or evacuate the U.S. embassy there. Oh, that should be interesting. Are you not seeing echoes of Libya? The rebel leader, Abdel Malik El Houthi, warned that a further escalation will happen if Hadi stands in the way of political reform. In a lengthy speech aired by the group's TV network, he said that, quote, all options are open, unquote, and that an escalation has no ceiling if the president does not speed up implementation of a UN-brokered peace deal. That deal would grant the rebels greater power and shake up a committee tasked with drafting a new constitution. Presidential guards surrendered the residence after being assured that Hadi could safely evacuate. Al Arabiya News said that two guards were killed in the assault. CNN reported shots were fired at the U.S. embassy vehicle carrying the diplomatic personnel Tuesday, but no one was apparently hurt. Clearly, the situation has deteriorated very significantly over the last 48 hours, said Britain's U.S. ambassador. Hadi had been in negotiation with the Houthi rebels for a ceasefire that ended in deadly street fighting on Monday. The rebels had set up checkpoints in the capital and taken control of the state media on Monday. So put on a seatbelt. Another country on its way into chaos. I mean, how many now? It's just unbelievable. And right on the tails of that, yes, Hammy, drop me another story. Russia and Iran sign a deal to widen their military cooperation. I also saw that Russia was selling nuclear material and going to help Iran build reactors. Tehran says the agreement will solve held up sales of S-300 air defense systems without elaborating much more. Russia and Iran have signed an agreement to expand their military ties and resolve a longstanding dispute over the sale of a controversial air defense system to the Islamic Republic. In remarks carried by Russian news agencies, Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said in Tehran Tuesday that the new agreement includes expanded counterterrorism cooperation, exchanges of military personnel for training purposes, and an understanding of each country's navy to more frequently use the other's ports. Wow, this is very interesting. I mean, especially if you back the truck up and you look at the petrodollar trading, where they are now trading in their own currencies between not only China and Russia, but China, Russia, and Iran. The deal provides for joint exercises and military training, as well as, quote, cooperation and peacekeeping, maintaining regional and international security and stability, and fighting against separatism and extremism, said Iranian Defense Minister's website. You know, I mean, this is, again, a second proxy war. We saw the first one. Well, there's three of them now, huh? Because we have Ukraine between the north and the south, east and the west, in the north and the south. We have Syria, Russia, and the United States against Assad and the rebels, deciding who's going to win there. And now we have Iran, U.S. against Iran, Russia helping to bolster them up. Russia has long been Iran's principal foreign arms supplier, but their ties took a major hit in 2010 when Moscow canceled the contract to deliver the advanced S-300 ground-to-air missiles, citing UN sanctions imposed over Tehran's nuclear program. Iran demanded $4 billion in compensation for the cancellation of the $800 million order. The two countries have also decided to settle the S-300's problem, the Iranian defense minister said on Tuesday, without elaborating. You know, this is a further march here toward World War III. This is totally uncool, in my opinion. Suji did not. Oh, hold on 1 second here. All right. Suji did not mention any prospective arms deal or the ongoing controversy over the Russian contract to deliver the S-300 system to Iran. Russia signed a 2007 contract to sell Tehran the S-300 system, but the weaponry was never delivered among strong objections by the United States and Israel. Yes, and Israel has reinserted itself as to the center of all terror. They are just victims of everything in Europe now. Iranian defense, and Israel's been the one that's been chomping at the bit to go bomb the shit out of Iran for quite a while now. Iranian Defense Minister Hossein, I don't even know how to say this name, Dahlan, told state television that Iran and Russia had a, quote, shared analysis of U.S. global strategy, its interference in the region and international affairs, and the need to cooperate in the struggle against the interference of foreign forces in that region, unquote. And boy, isn't that the truth. As Russia has been hit by Western sanctions over its involvement in the conflict in Ukraine, it has stepped up its economic ties with Iran in the past year. The two governments are also allied with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in his nearly four-year-old conflict with Western-backed rebels. And yes, that's exactly what I said. So the sides are lining up very nicely now. And it's a pretty ugly picture that they're painting. So I don't know. And then we have the bullshit artist coming out painting this picture of all the things that he's going to do to fix all the bullshit that's happened over the last 6 years. And boy, just the people who are absolutely clueless believe every bit of it. It's pretty disgusting. I don't know if I'm going to have time to run any clippies of Obama selling bullshit to people. I don't see anything that's catching my attention right now, so I'm going to have to wait until tomorrow on that one. Trying to see if there was anything. What we'll have to wait for is somebody putting out a clip where they take 57 clips of Obama saying the same thing over and over and over again in his lecture full of lies. There actually is one thing here. If you want to talk about Russia in the last minute, Pigmine. I don't know what's playing. So I guess we're not going to be able to. Something loaded and something is playing, and I am not sure what it is, but it's an ad somewhere. Maybe if I kill this, hold on, we'll try one more time. Let's see. I don't know what's playing. Don't you hate that when these ads just play and you don't know where they are, and nothing is even giving me a little sound icon to know? We'll try one more time.
But you'll find more TV.
What the fuck? Well, I guess we're not going to be able to. I don't know where the hell it's coming from, but it's not coming from anything I see that's open. Maybe this last one. All right, wait. Fourth time is a charm, possibly. Ha! There we go. All right. Military cyborg biker presented to Putin. Let's see if we can get this to play quickly. I guess there's no narration. So that was a bust anyway. Russia's military is busy building autonomous tanks, unmanned vehicles, and other weapons. One we won't be ashamed of in the 21st century. Putin visited the research institute outside of Moscow and was shown a combat robot. It is a robot on an ATV, and it sure as hell looks like a Polaris. So there you go. I'll drop it in chat. And that's the end. Today is Wednesday, so make sure you guys stick around tonight. We got Josh on live at 6 p.m. The boys from New York continue a condition with guest Prepper Chick tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Truth or Talk, David Bernstein at 9, and Hans Radio, Nick and Beetle on PM Eastern.